from Buffalo Toronto Public Media. This is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
Absolutely.
If we're uncomfortable
Absolutely.
Talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
Welcome to What's Next. I'm Naila Ansari-Cotillo, and I'm excited about our episode today. We have a big conference coming up, first annual Sankofa Conference here in Buffalo, and I have Dr. Marcus Du Bois Watson and Queen Nuvia here with us today.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. The vibes here are already just relaxed and awesome, so I'm excited for everyone to hear everything that you all are going to bring to the conference, a little bit about the conference.
Yes.
And about you too, as well. So welcome to What's Next.
Thank you.
Thank you. We ready to go.
Thank you. The Sankofa Conference, for folks who don't know, this is the first annual conference, and it'll be happening February 28th. Mm-hmm. At the Buffalo Academy for Visual and Performing Arts, also known as BPS 192, located on 450 Maston Avenue, Buffalo, New York, 14209, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m.
Yes.
So the first annual conference here, and invites Western New York and Southern Ontario community to enrich our experience that goes beyond education, and it's a profound call to acknowledge and celebrate the full spectrum of Black history and its enduring impact on the world, and it's not to be missed when folks are coming out on February 28th. So tell me a little bit, how did you all get involved in the conference? How did you all come in as presenters? And we'll talk a little bit about your panel as well.
Well, I know Emmanuel Kulu, who is organizing, running, planning the whole thing. He and I have vibed very well on just brotherhood, Black brotherhood, and things that we talk about. He knows that I'm a Black American married to a woman from the African continent. And I think he has some of that in his own background as well. But he wanted to see if we would be interested in having a session on continental Africans and African diasporans relationships. And he thought that we embodied that as a married couple, and invited us to participate in the conference.
Because most people don't know, there's a lot of misconceptions, I think, when people think of, you know, Black Americans and they think of Africans, or there's whole idea that we are different and then that's in certain ways similar, but there's really never really any true context that brings us together that we understand, because a lot of times we don't know each other's history, so much of it kind of gets it's complex. Most of us don't even know about our history. Mm-hmm. Well, unless you take Dr. Watson's courses, you do. But a lot of times we're very one-sided on what we know, and then, you know, you go into all these different stereotypes. So to have this conference come together where you can bring, you know, everyone together to really understand the Black experience and the complexities of what that is across the diaspora is huge and important. So what are some of the themes that personally kind of brought you into this? You know, I know you just talked about it a little bit, but what are some of the things for that you two really wanted to kind of bring out into this conference?
I think we want to unite our people. And it's just like you said, you know, from different backgrounds, like, you know, him being Black American, me being African, and just us meeting and learning about each other. And it's like, oh my goodness, we are the same, but we are so far apart. And learning each other and learning from each other's cultures and background, it's like, you know, we've merged it into such a beautiful situation where we want to, like, you know, share with our children, our friends, and when he was a professor in University of Wyoming, we even tried to create something for the students to bring them together. So it's not like, you know, you have Black people here and you have Africans here. We are together. And so we want to, like, you know, be Black and stay Black and enjoy our Blackness in every way.
Yes. And I if I can add something, it's the way we have our similarities and differences. I mean, you know, African descended people everywhere. It's, to me, it's kind of like accents. And you know how sometimes if you hear something that sounds like an accent to you, a lot of people like don't even want to go there. Like, I can't understand you.
Right.
You know, even though it's the same language, let's say English, for example. But we have that thing where it's like, I'm not even going to try to understand this person, you know. But just on the other side of that, if you do tune in and listen, that's when you start getting the rewards, you know, of understanding and knowledge and the commonalities and some differences as well. But we just gotta, you know, these are like cultural accents, let me say, you know, African continent, Black America, Black Caribbean, you know, I liken these two cultural accents. And so, you know, we want to get past the accent impediment and see if we can, you know, really talk to each other.
Now, speaking of accents, some people don't know that you actually lived in Africa. Was it 8 years?
Seven to 8 years.
So speaking of accents, how was it in reverse when you had to go and live with your American accent?
Yeah. I mean, for me, when I went to the African continent for the first time, I went as a certain kind of person. I had Malcolm X in my head. I had Garvey in my head. I had my own parents. Like, so I was there to embrace, you know. I wasn't going there like I'm an American and, you know, I have something to give you. And I was there to actually bracket away as many of the assumptions and biases I may have and just try to be open to learning. So, but what that did for me accent wise is because I wanted to be understood so badly by my brothers and sisters on the continent, I think I tried to change my accent a little bit.
They're probably looking at you like, what are you doing?
Well, I think it worked in some ways, you know, but after spending so much time there and coming back here, my boys back here, when I came back, they were like, what happened to your voice? You know, I was like, what? I'm not included anymore, you know? But that was one experience with language and accents for me, you know.
When you were there, did you find some things were odd about Dr. Watson when you all met and that you were like, what are you, you know, what is this? Like your behaviors, traditions, culturally, was it very different for you?
A lot of things, like, you know, even like holding hands in Ghana, where I'm from, you can, like, you know, a guy can hold hands and it's nothing about sexuality. Girls and girls hold hands, everybody holds hands and it's fine. But here in the United States, it's so different. And it's even like, you know, how we met and when we held hands, he thought, oh my gosh, she likes me. And I was thinking something totally different.
Just another being. So,
yes. But I think one thing I want to touch on, like, you know, when he said the thing about the accent thing, like, you know, to the Blackness of this thing that we are trying to bring back is, like, you know, when you hear African accents, people, like, you know, kind of like get turned off and they are like, I don't get what you're saying. I don't want to understand. But like, you know, when they hear an accent like a French accent or British accent, then they're like, ooh, keep talking to me. They start feeling like, ooh, it sounds sexy. But like when they hear African accent, they don't see you at the same level. Mm-hmm. They see, you know, so those kind of things is like, we need to embrace our beauty and even, like, you know, the clicks from the different accents and the whatever you hear, be willing to open and listen and see the beauty that you see when a French person is speaking that you don't understand or English person. Give them that chance too. And if you don't want to, we don't need you.
Right.
We know us and we appreciate us. We have to find that and bring us together. And so, like, you know, just a little thing like accents, how it's even get discriminated against by everybody. And so we need to kind of like, you know, enjoy our blackness and live in our blackness.
Absolutely.
When you all have the this conference that's coming up that I'm excited to attend, the Sankofa conference, what is your session going to be focused on, particularly, especially with the dynamics that you two have coming from two different, you know, understandings of blackness culturally, and then also in terms of location? What are you all looking to bring in for your presentation?
Well, let me say, as a run-up to this, how it's going to be structured. Ours is going to be a human barometer activity. So one of those where we're going to have maybe three people from the African continent, three people from Black America, and they're going to kind of be standing a little bit apart. We're going to read some prompts. Mm-hmm. And then if you agree, no matter which group you're from, you come and you sit, you talk about it for a little bit. And then after that, the people who disagree, they come and we talk about it for a little bit. And so it's going to be dynamic, interesting. The voices of the participants are going to be, are going to count. They're going to be heard. And hopefully there's going to be a lot of learning. Now, in terms of themes and subject matters, generally, we just want to know where we're at as a people, including, do those participating see us as a people? Mm-hmm. You know, that has to be, you know, up for discussion. And I think it, in the current context, in a sense, maybe American culture has always kind of played on division. Mm-hmm. But division is being exacerbated at this moment in the country, right? So does that spill into the thoughts of Black folks? You know, how are we feeling? Are we feeling ever more divided? Are we feeling like this is a galvanizing kind of moment because of what's happening? And we just kind of want to know, what do we think about each other? Where do those thoughts come from? Can we trace that to things that were said, upbringing, and so forth? What are the advantages of being more unified, which we don't mean utopia, we don't mean holding hands, mm-hmm. but just understanding ourselves as a people with African heritage, and is it possible? And who's willing to do what? You know.
And you speak about division now. I actually think there is a unity coming together. It'll be interesting because I have more questions on that. Just because there are all these kind of ideas, I think, on both sides about what does it mean to be Black when folks are coming into America. But it's interesting because we're dealing with immigration and we're dealing with ICE. And so the people that are getting picked up are Black and brown people. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the assumption has been, which I think a lot of Black Americans, particularly with Africans, is like, well, you know, a lot of Africans are taught they come here and we don't want to really mess with Black Americans because, you know, we heard y'all, you know, are, you know,
criminals
and, you know, you all don't do well in society. Mm-hmm. Like all those types of things kind of play, I think, into those negative stereotypes that we have with amongst each other. Mm-hmm. So do you feel like because of what's happening, you know, nationally with the federal government, that there is a unity that's starting to happen, that people are kind of seeing, you know, well, I'm coming here and I'm working hard, but I'm still kind of seen as a Black person.
Right. All right. I think there has to be a lot of work done, and it has to go from, like, you know, the classroom. Here and the classroom there in Africa. Because, like, you know, growing up, like, you know, because of us being colonized by the British, we are in our own countries, but, like, you know, you go to school and you are not allowed to speak your own languages, and you are not allowed to be yourself. And so all those education that they are given over there, it's not education to empower them and to empower us Africans. It's education to continue what the Europeans want. And so for us to be able to get our people, like, you know, the wisdom about what these people are up to, because we are welcoming people, we welcome them, and they came and took advantage of us. And so when we learn about that and we see our brothers and sisters from America or from Caribbeans and stuff like that, and we work together, we unite, we can be better. But right now, we don't know that. Like when I met my husband and I was about to come to the United States, that one of the advice he said is just be obedient, be careful, else he's going to shoot you. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, because like, you know, it's everything is about guns. Everything is about shooting. And so he's like, you know, play your part, else he's going to shoot you. And that's what my dad told me. And so like, you know, a lot of times, like we had the Cosby Show, which was beautiful, like this beautiful family that everybody wanted. But then everything else is the shooting, the things that you don't want your child to travel to go and learn. And then you have the same thing. When I came here, you have Black Americans talking about, like, you know, Africa is like the jungle, the wild, like, you know.
Yeah, like they don't have shoes. Like.
Yes. One of his uncles actually asked me, when did I take the bone out of my nose? And I'm like, oh my God. And he's a Black man.
Right.
So for me, like, you know, the education has to go both ways so we can learn about each other and welcome each other so we can unite and be stronger together. But when we keep, like, you know, we allow them to educate us with what the program is for them, we are going to be
in trouble
and stuck where they want us to be. We have to break out of the box and make our own situation, make our own circle. We don't need a box.
And sometimes I think it's going like back when we go and understand our history. Some of it is really learning, like, okay, some of these traditions are not as kind of odd to us as we may think they are. You know, I think of a time I was working with a woman named Mama Kadiatu. She was my African dance teacher from Senegal, and she used to like cuss us out all day, like on them, but then make everybody dinner at night. But she was everybody's mama. You know, like you called her mama. That was and it was, you know, she was everyone's kind of nurturer in the community, and you learned from that culture. You're like, you know, this really isn't that different from how we function here. Mm-hmm. It just is, it looks a little bit different, but the ways, the love and the spirit of it is the same.
Right. It's like, you know, and you have those mamas here too in Black America where the kids come home, you don't leave, like friends and everything, you don't leave the house until you are fed. Mm-hmm. And so you have that, like, we have this innate, like, love and togetherness. And so that's why I'm like, we don't need a box. We are a circle. We are together type of people. And, you know, I remember, like, you know, sometimes people see me here and they are like, you Africans, like, we are not like you, we are not you, because you guys have this European steal us and enslave us and did this and that, and and you never cared about us. And I'm like, it's not like that. You know, I wasn't there, and it's like a white person say, it's not my ancestors didn't do it. No, I wasn't. However, I'm right now, whatever I can do, mm-hmm. and to bring us together, for us to see each other and give each other that grace, I'm ready for it. You know, I remember as a little kid, without knowing anything, nobody ever talked to me, but I could see, like, you know, when there's a boxing match going on, I know, like, all of us, me, my brothers, every friends and stuff like that. If it's a white guy and a Black guy, of course, shoot, the Black guy wins. Like, hell no, we like, what? So we have it in us that we're supporting each other. We need to bring it out. And the same thing, like, you know, even like, you know, when there's a beauty pageant, like, you know, Miss Universe or whatever, and we watch it in Ghana, we're supporting the Black girl. Without knowing, like, but then you have the same thing where you go to buy, your mother go and buy you, like, you know, Barbie doll. You choose the white one over the Black one. For some reason, they've, like, you know, programmed us to be thinking, like, you know, white is beauty, whatever. But we still have it in us. When it's time to support, shoot, that comes out. And we need to bring that out. We need to bring that out so we can unite and not let this male eating. Sorry, actually, let me
cut it out before.
I know this might be getting to the discussions when the presentations happen. Because it was interesting because I was actually going to go there. Like, you know, how are you all going to maybe process or, you know, kind of mediate? Because some of the feelings can get really strong in these conversations, whether they agree or disagree, because people take it so personally. Like, I can think in academia, there's this notion that, you know, if someone is Nigerian, for instance, that like they can kind of get a one up over a Black American or that they're, you know, they train harder or that they're coming in prepared for a certain kind of way because of their race, you know, over a Black American. So, you know, some people feel that, you know, very personally when they come in. So what is your strategy on if, you know, something, I wouldn't say pop off, but, those feelings can get high.
It's a great question, because as we continue to conceptualize the session, it sounds like setting some ground rules might be appropriate.
Yes.
You know,
always like ground rules.
Right. Talking to the participants about what it is, what the goals are. Because it's not to convert anybody, you know, but it's just to raise all of our consciousness. Whatever you came in with, if you can leave, you know, a step or two above that in terms of your thinking and understanding of your peers who are with you during the session, but also of yourself, then we're calling it a win, you know. So setting that as a goal. And then I think... I think we're the kind of people who we are gonna respect people's thoughts and feelings. Granted, and this might be in the setup, we're not neutral, empty vessels. You know, we're full human beings with our thoughts and our perspectives. And so, I think we would agree that our view of this whole African diaspora dynamic is people who are each other, who believe in some instances they're not. What do you do with that paradox? You know, if you actually are each other in some kind of provable empirical way and even some deductive ways, and yet the people don't think they are, now what do you do? You know, so we come into that with that informed assumption that we're talking to people who are each other, but who may not see each other. And so we know that's the paradox. And so we accept that, and that's what we're working on and through.
And I think it helps that you two have been able to do that for years, because you've gone into her world and she's gone into your world where you've been able to kind of identify like, oh, okay, I don't really rock with this. But a lot of times, you know, and I know we'll definitely talk about this further, is that we're all coming from the same plane of colonization and white supremacy. And when we understand that that's where all of these stereotypes and all these things are coming from, then we are able to unify together to say, okay, we really don't like each other, not because we don't like each other, but because we've been taught to not like each other based off a construct that doesn't, you know, doesn't really exist for us.
Yeah.
So we're going to go into a break. And then when we come back, we're going to dive into a little bit more of, you know, this panel discussion, which I'm so excited to see in real life. You know, sometimes you see these things on like YouTube and stuff, but to see it in real life, I think is going to be effective. But then also going into a little bit of the history and the importance and what does it mean for our community for this kind of work. So we will be back after the break. What's next?
During these difficult times for BTPM NPR, we get our courage and our strength directly from you, our members and listeners. Your words of encouragement and your financial contributions let us know just how important we are to you and our community. If you've made a donation since our federal funding has been eliminated, thank you. We really appreciate it. But the fight does go on, and your continued support keeps us strong and healthy, so we can keep giving you the high-quality news and information you expect from us. If you haven't made a donation to BTPM NPR lately, please do it now. Your dollars are crucial in keeping this station on the air. Call 1-877-456-8870 or visit btpm.org and thank you.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
From the fringes of the mainstream to the local music you love. Listen to Buffalo Toronto Public Media at the Bridge Monday through Thursday, 8 p.m. to midnight on BTPM NPR at 88.7 or from your smart speaker.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back. I'm Naila Ansari-Cotillo, and we are going to come back to a strong conversation we were just having with Dr. Marcus Watson and also our Queen Nubia Goddess here
Thank
today. And before we left off, we were really talking about this concept of unity between Black Americans and Africans and what does that look like. And the first annual Sankofa conference that will be coming here, we are going to, as in you all, we'll really kind of dissect these different ideas and also this unity of bringing Black folks together here in Western New York, and that will be on February 28th. But I want to dive back into what we were talking about in terms of unity and us understanding a little bit more of the history and how we got to kind of being a little bit divisive or separated in our understandings of one another. So what do you think is keeping Black folks from being united?
John Henrik Clark, one of our esteemed ancestor historians, said that one of our chief problems as a people is we're focused too much on where the slaves' ships took us to and not enough on where they took us from, which ties into history, right? And on top of that, just general truth, I think we care about our area code and our city or our Caribbean island and things like, or our African country now. In a way, Africans were dragged into containers called countries, because of the export of the nation state onto the continent. But so we care about those kinds of places where the slave ships took us to. Not enough on where they took us from. And when we say that, now we're going into the conference and the importance of history, right? Understanding that history tells you who you are, where you came from, and where you're going. And if, to the extent that the consciousness of many African people on the continent and in the diaspora is shaped and infiltrated by a European consciousness, then we may trace ourselves back to Europeans and European history. And we may know more Europeans in history than we do Africans, right? And more about the kings and queens in Europe than on the African continent. And so that, to me, that's where history is a key. Because you can go back to just the 1960s, you're gonna get one kind of interpretation of what life is today. If you go back to enslavement times, you get a different perspective. And if you, what we need to do, I think, is bust through that slavery thing historically and go back to life prior to the enslavement of African people and the colonization of Africans, because that is where the slave ships took us from. And it's there that we can start to see commonalities, right? When we focus on where they took us to, we're focusing on our differences. And then in a place like the United States that isn't really good at thinking historically, it's even exacerbated how much we're just thinking about, where we are and our individual selves and so forth. And as long as we're thinking about ourselves in those fragmented ways, it's going to be hard to understand that paradox, or try to solve that paradox of how we think we're so different, and yet more fundamentally, we have something in common.
It's so interesting because that overlooking history is an interesting nugget, because I think it happens on both sides. I had a friend from the Sudan, and I remember when she came to the U.S., she's about 15, 16 years old. She's taking history courses. She had no idea what slavery was at all, like chattel slavery. She was like, well, what is this? And I remember kind of side-eyed, like, well, you didn't learn this in the Sudan? Yeah. And she was like, no.
We barely learn it here.
Yeah, right, exactly. We barely, yeah, that's true. And so I thought that was interesting because it seems to be overlooked on both sides of the spectrum, even prior to. So can you talk a little bit about that? You know, you can talk about from Ghana, like what is that history that you all learn before, you know, before you came here to the States?
I think, like, they barely teaches us about slavery in Ghana, barely. You know, there are little songs that I remember as little girl that we used to sing, the Elmina song. And
that's a slave about, castle, right?
Yeah.
Or dungeon.
Yeah. And, but a lot of the things that they teach in our schools is mostly Eurocentric stuff. Mm-hmm. And so we are going along with the program. Like what they are teaching you guys here in the United States is the same. They are trying to keep that program going so that they get what they want. Mm-hmm. They get to steal our minerals and they get to make us feel like we cannot fight back. And like, you know, the most violent people are the ones that tell us we are violent, even though they are the most violent people, you know? And so it's divide and conquer. And so they are dividing us and they are making us like, I feel like I'm a Nigerian. Somebody is I'm a Ghanaian, somebody's a Nigerian. And so they have this like friendly kind of fight about jollof rice, but it still make you feel like, you know, I belong here, you belong there type of thing. But I'm like, I don't want to play that game. Mm-hmm. I don't play, a Nigerian is my sister. Somebody from Congo, we are sisters. Senegal, America, we are black, we are human beings. And you know, it's this like Eurocentric stuff that it makes it like, you know, it's so expensive for a Ghanaian, a Nigerian, a Togolese like person to travel here to the United States. And you cannot, even like after you pay all that money and they reject your visa, they don't give you the money back and you are back at being broke. Where else, like, you know, Europeans, you pay, like American, when you pay less than $100 for a visa to go to Ghana, you get to go anytime you want. Mm-hmm. You know, so they've made the world a place where they can go anywhere they want. But for you as a black and brown person, you are not allowed to go anywhere you want. They want to divide you, put you in your place. And so we have to come out. Like when you were born, I know when I was born, I didn't come out of my mother's uterus with a passport.
Right. Right.
You know, they came up with a passport. They telling me that I belong to this place and then I cannot go where I want. But for a white person, they can backpack anywhere they want. They can steal whatever they want because they can. And until we start learning and educating each other and telling each other we are together, don't put me in that box, you are my brother, you are my sister, let's work together. And until we do that, we are going to still keep fighting, but we have to come together. And one of those things, like, you know, if we keep playing their game and we are in their world, no matter how high you get, if they want to bring you down, they bring you down like that. So we don't need to be playing their game. We need to figure out our own
way
to live our life, because their life is not for us. It's to benefit them, not for us.
And there is a reclaiming. There are some countries, some African countries that are trying to say, hey, if you're a Black American, come over here. We'll give y'all free citizenship. I know a few celebrities went over and got there. Or you see, you start to see a large group of Americans that are going over to like, you know what, it's not as bad as maybe I thought it was. You know, it's not like you said, it's not the jungle as people think it is, right? Like I can build a house and I can live here and I can have resources and I can understand, you know, who my people are and where I come from. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's a way for us to reclaim that here for ourselves? I don't know if it's education. I know storytelling has been something that we've done as Black folks, but is there a reclaiming that you all think that we can do?
Sure. I've said white privilege. Sure. Let's give Black privilege. You know, like when you are in, let's say you are working and you have another Black person, look out for them. Look out for each other because they do. You cannot, you cannot let them get your kids in the best schools, do this, and then you are like, oh, I cannot do that. I have to, we look out for each other. I got you. And we got each other. Mm-hmm. I'm not waiting for them to pave a way for you. I'll pave a way for you when I can. Any moment I can, like every opportunity I can to make a way for my fellow human, especially a Nubian king or queen, I got you. Because I need to give you that privilege. Because when I give you that privilege, that is going to our people too. And you are going to look out for my son, my daughter. And we do that for each other. We go along like that. And that's like, you know, the thing with Ubuntu. We look out for each other. And we've been those kind of people. And we are the kind of people that when we are so kind that we wouldn't do that just to hurt white people. We welcome everybody. We welcome. They have the culture where they try to oppress somebody to look bigger, but we have a culture of inclusivity. So yes, we are those kind of people. We work together when we can, and it's not about climbing and going somewhere. Let's live life, you know?
And I think that's an interesting point because that's an easy way of reclaiming. Because I think a lot of times we think of reclaiming as, okay, we got to totally shut down the system. And all of these things take years and decades, you know, of change and laws and policies. But that's a simple act that you can do all the time. Exactly. Whether it's your classmate and say, okay, look, I see you struggling a little bit. I need you to get it together. You need to go, you need some help over here. Or this concept of professionalism. Like if you ask what professionalism is to five people, it'll be five different things. Right. But you do know when somebody's, you know, checking somebody like, all right, I'm going to need you to get together because so-and-so's looking at you this way. Yeah. And I think if we think of those ways of reclaiming, even in our own communities, looking out for, you know, each other, especially because there's this idea of when, you know, sometimes Black folks make it, they have money or they, you know, they go out into, you know, suburban environment or whatever. Yes. It's like they leave their folks behind. Like, what does that look like to be able to lift everyone up together and have that reclaiming?
Yeah. My thought is a little more esoteric than that one. I hope it comes back to being practical and applicable. But I think it comes back to history again, you know, and it comes back to, I want to look out for my brother and sister, but first, do I see them as brother and sister? Mm. And do I like who I see? And I think a lot of that has to do with, do I love myself? And now I'm going back to history, because if you're saying, you know, we are an African people, I'm not no African. That tells me that person thinks of Africa in a negative way, which means they don't know Africa, right? Besides the things about all human beings come from Africa, you know, all shades of skin color, which are all beautiful, are all based on an original dark skin color. So we are the foundation, you know, so those kinds of things, but also the kingdoms and empires and all of those things, the multilingualism and all the things that we've accomplished. Now I can start to break through and say, oh, maybe I want to be associated with this Africa thing, you know? Then that self-love starts to come. And it's like, okay, I'm an African, and now I can look at someone else. I look in the mirror, I love who I am as an African. Now I can look at you and love who you are. And now I can say, hey, I got you. Mm-hmm. You might not know it, but I can't expect myself and others. I got to a certain point of my own thinking and my own, so I can't necessarily expect the same of you that I have in myself, but I see you as brother and sister. I got your back, you know? In the same way that we got everybody's back, regardless of background, but we're just talking about internal relationships and dynamics within Black communities.
Because it's important. We all have to help each other.
Yes.
And we're, you know, and we are part of that, the human family,
right.
As well. And I think that's an important take that, you know, sometimes when we talk so much about the divisiveness, mm-hmm. we also have to understand that we all have to work together to make the world function, and particularly in a positive mm-hmm. way. We're going to take another break mm-hmm. and then we will come right back and close out on this first annual Sankofa conference. I'm Naila Ansari Cotillo, and this is BTPM's NPR's What's Next.
Buffalo Toronto Public Media brings our community together with programs that inspire, inform, and entertain. Enjoy trusted news, local performances, educational resources, and cultural treasures all in one place. It's more than media. It's a connection to the world around you. Discover what Buffalo Toronto Public Media offers at btpm.org. This is Public Media.
Are you aware that only 3 out of every 10 listeners are members of this station? If you are one of those 7, it's time to step up and make a donation. With our federal funding being eliminated, leaving us in a $2.2 million deficit, that statistic must change. Become a new member of BTPM NPR today. Call 1-877-456-8870 or visit btpm.org and donate generously. Thank you.
Every Wednesday, listen live during Morning Edition and All Things Considered on BTPM NPR for in-depth reports spotlighting crucial issues impacting the disability community. Catch up on Disabilities Beat reports you've missed at btpm.org/disabilities.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Welcome back. I'm Naila Ansari Cotillo, and this is BTPM's What's Next. And I've been having an amazing discussion with Dr. Marcus Watson and our Queen Nubian Goddess. And we are talking about this first annual conference and all the themes and topics. And, you know, we went into the history and the importance of the work that you all do. And I want to make sure people know that February 28th is the date, and it'll be from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Buffalo Academy for Visual and Performing Arts. So this conference and this panel specifically, I'm so excited for this panel, by the way. Y'all got me, mm-hmm. you know, really excited to actually see, you know, and build our community together. Who do you all think should attend this Sankofa conference?
I'll start. Besides saying everybody, I would say I would want students from Buffalo State to attend. I would want colleagues from Buffalo State to attend. In fact, the you know, members of the universities around here should come. Definitely want folks from the community to show up. The elders, the youth, of all walks of life, really. Because, and maybe I should say this in terms of those who may attend and what they can anticipate. We're still working on who the participants will be in our presentation, but it's looking like most will be Buffalo State University students, you know, either, you know, from the African continent or who identify as Black American. And so that's who you're coming to hear mostly. We will have some community members who are presenters as well, again, from the African continent, Black Americans. but you're going to come hear young minds talk about these critically important issues and give us a sense of where we are as a people, as a community, and what work we still must do to improve our situation.
And I have to shout out Buffalo State for folks that don't know that Dr. Marcus Watson is the coordinator of the Africana Studies program at Buffalo State, and he's done an amazing job, and really one of the best in the country. I think our program is at Buffalo State, and you know, really gives a voice to our students to really understand what it means to be an African and bring community together. So it's just not higher ed in the ivory tower, and we'd forget about community. So Dr. Watson has been an amazing role model in that way. Why do you think these conversations are important outside of the academy, outside of higher ed? Because this is typically sometimes where these conversations happen, but most of the time they just stay in the room that it happened in.
Well, I think it's very important for everybody to be included in this conversation, for people to hear, even like, you know, even in Buffalo State, you have that small push, like African Americans diaspora studies, like, you know, they get to have that. But if we can get it for, like, you know, the people in education, the people in the healthcare field, the people in the business field, because we interact with everybody. And, you know, like, you know, I think one of the panel for the Sankofa thing is healthcare. And I hope I get to go and see that, because I really will want to participate in that, because I'm in the healthcare field. And the stuff I see, just, it's heartbreaking. And, you know, for us to, like, you know, educate everybody, not us, but, like, you know, Black people, to educate everybody about life. You know, like, you know, I shouldn't have to tell you I'm human. You know, that Black person shouldn't have to tell you that. You should know that. But, you know, you have it where this culture, you can, like, you know, I'm sorry to say this, but, like, you know, they respect animals like dogs over a human. You know, like, you know, a Black person can get shot and it's like, okay, but then a dog gets shot, oh my God, you know, it's a whole thing. And they are both living beings, but, like, you know, for some reason, Black people are treated as less than, and you see that in so many fields out there. And so for us to be able to discuss this and talk about it, and everybody come and join, so we can learn about each other and respect each other and learn from that. So I think everybody, like, you know, we cannot just leave it to just one place in Buffalo State or UB or in academia. We have to bring it to everybody.
Everybody come out of the boxes.
Yes, and come, it won't be lectures, because I know sometimes people, they see that, and they see, you know, some folks that, you know, work in higher ed, and they're like, okay, I'm not going to this lecture, or they feel like they, you know, it's not a space for them that they feel welcomed in. So these are really community-centered conversations that, you know, you want everyone to kind of come in together so that it has that impact. What do you hope that the attendees take away from this conference?
I hope they leave the conference inspired, feeling jazzed about, it's cool to learn about African history. It's cool to talk about and try to resolve issues and problems, because they can envision a better future when that happens. I hope they are inspired to follow up with some practical actions of their own. You know, how can they participate in this ongoing conversation of reconciliation and healing? We're focusing on Black folks, but as humanity, there is a way to live, I would submit, that can be way more trustful, way more friendly, loving, and humanizing. And it's in us as human beings to do that. And at this conference, I think the conference is playing its small role in inspiring that optimism, in that hope, through understanding and grasping the Black experience.
I think what I can add to that is that, like, you know, with I hope they can also know that wherever they are, they belong. They, you know, Black people from America, Black people from India, Black people from Mexico, like, you know, Black people have traveled in century, like, you know, way before Europeans start discovering crap. Sorry. But yeah, Black people have traveled. Like, Black people were here before them. And so they can, like, wherever you are, you belong, and have pride in yourself, have pride in your beauty, have pride in your food, have pride in your children, have pride in your men, have pride in your women. Know that you are the God. You know, God, you are God, and you know that. You don't need nobody to tell you anything else. And so, yes, Black people, I want them to get it. And I mean, for us to know that, yes, we are Nubian royalties and living that, I hope so.
Ashe.
One last question for you all before we wrap up for today. How do you all continue this work after February 28th?
I mean, for me, I have a kind of hack answer, because I teach Africana studies. Yes. You know? Yes. I teach Africana studies. So essentially, I do this work as my profession. But I can expand on that. Because it's Africana studies, and one of the principles of Africana studies is that knowledge must go beyond the classroom, right? In Africana studies, and you know this, right, being an Africana studies professor as well, that we take our lessons outside of campus. Mm-hmm. We collaborate, we partner, we give students experiences in the community. Because if you are studying Africana studies in any way, you're a thinking person, you're a really smart person, you have perspective, but maybe more than anything, you want to do something, you know, in the world. You want to do something with your life. And so I'm going to continue to do that, you know, make sure students, you know, get out into the community, go to Ghana on the Ghana study abroad, see the world, and get inspired to, you know, for a life where they're helping to heal it, you know, heal the world.
I plan to continue it with my work, and out here, like I said, the privilege, Black privilege, and it's the same thing. Like, you know, somebody might listen to this and say, why is she saying that? That's not fair and all that. But, like, you know, I heard my coworker recently talking about, hey, like, you know, getting stopped by a cop, but because she has a cop relative, like, you know, she got let go, you know, so that is privilege right there that I'm not going to get because I don't have a cop, you know. So I said, like, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you know, when you're in, you feel like you have this group, you can look out for each other. Like, you know, the cops are looking out for each other. The doctors, when their family members come, they are like, oh, this is my family member. So you get it. So, hey, that's my thing, Black privilege. We get to, I get to extend that for my group too, and for my people, and any way I can, and for us to live a Nubian royalty life.
Well, thank you so much for coming and being here with me today, our Nubian goddess and Dr. Marcus Watson. The first annual Sankofa conference will take place February 28th. It'll be at the Buffalo Academy for Visual and Performing Arts, 450 Madison Avenue, Buffalo, New York, 14209. And it goes from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. There's amazing guest speakers that will be there, and different panelists. Zainab Badawi will be there, award-winning journalist as well. We have this amazing panel and presentation. We have a host of other folks that will be there.
Please come join us.
Yes, come join.
Let's have fun.
Come on out and make sure you all come to the conference. I'm Naila Ansari Cotillo, and this is BTPM's NPR's What's Next.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.